You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before we get started today, I want to let you know about a free resource we're offering. It's an e-booklet called Pipeline: Succession at Every Level. Now, you may have already downloaded Developing Your Leadership Pipeline and walked through that with your staff team. If you have, awesome. This is your next step. Most of the time, when we think about succession, we think about replacing the person at the top. We need to think about, however, reproducing leaders at every level of your ministry. If you're ready to do that, then I would say go to lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top, and you can download it there. Now, let's get on with the podcast. Enjoy. You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Adkins, and we are here today with a very special guest, special for multiple reasons, one of which is that he's been a frequent podcast listener, as well as a person who's been a guest quite often. And the other is that he's going to be speaking at our Pipeline conference this fall. So join me in welcoming William Vander Blumen.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd. It's always fun to get to chat and especially be on the podcast.
Good, good. Well, you know, we have had you on a couple of times, but one of the things that we're excited about is our upcoming conference on succession, and it's about creating succession at every level. But one of the reasons why this is a hot topic of conversation, I think, is in the last couple of years, you put out two books that I think have really given people to almost permission to have a conversation with their pastor, and pastors permission to have a conversation with their church. And that first book is Next, which really just gave an opportunity, I think, for both pastors and their staff to say, hey, can we have a good conversation about succession planning? So can you tell a little bit more about that book and how you can have pastoral succession that works?
Yeah, you know, I think, first of all, everybody thought we were crazy to be writing a book about pastoral succession. My mother said, "You're writing a book about what?" And, succession, you know, for pastors. And I think she thought she was going to have to buy all 12 copies that were printed. and we had pretty low expectations. The goal of the book was to just make a conversation legitimate. You know, it's used to be, you don't talk about it. You know, the old saying in the Catholic Church is the only sick pope is a dead pope. You know, you don't hear people talking about, well, what happens when I'm not here? You know, and pastors a lot of times are treated more, rather than an employee-employer relationship, it's more like a family, right? So in a corporate setting, it's the board's responsibility to start succession planning at the very beginning of a CEO's relationship with the company. But if a pastor comes in and says, let's talk about what happens when I'm not here anymore, it's not a corporate conversation. It's more like dad sitting down to the dinner table saying, let's talk about what happens when I'm not here anymore. And the kids freak out thinking he's got some terminal disease, and mom freaks out and is ready to kill him because she's convinced he's running off with somebody. And it's not a conversation that's easy to have. So we hoped by writing the book, we just make it okay to have the conversation, because, you know, it dawned on me when I was interviewing a guy, you know, we help churches find their staff. And so I was interviewing a guy who the church had a new senior pastor, and he probably needed to move on. Good guy, just different vision. And I said, where do you want to go? What do you want to do? And he's like, man, I'll do anything. I'll do children's ministry. I'll do student pastor. I'll do associate. He said, I mean, I'm a guy, but I'd do women's ministry. I'll do anything. And then he stopped and he said, you know what I don't, the one thing I don't want to do, I don't want to be an interim pastor. I'm like, well, I get that. And somewhere in there in the conversation, it got blurted out, you know, every pastor is an interim pastor. And that applies to student pastors. It applies to head pastors. It applies to every one of us. Because, you know, they're functionally, I only see three possible endings to a pastor's ministry. One, you run the church into the ground and it closes and it's not anymore. Not cool. Two, maybe you get to be the pastor the day Jesus returns. Very cool. very hard to calendar, right?
Yes.
So the only other option I know is somebody's going to come after you. And that's true no matter what your role in staff. So at every level, there needs to be some plan for what to do next. And so in the book, we did a bunch of case studies. There's a lot of data and a lot of stories, good, bad, and ugly. And we left out some of the really ugly ones. And, you know, I think we're in our fourth or fifth printing now. It's kind of crazy. I think it hit a nerve just at the right time. It's not that the book is like some kind of page turner. It's just something that a lot of people are thinking about right now.
Okay, and then the book on search, it's really kind of a handbook for like search committees, is that right?
Yeah, a field guide, you know, the user's guide to search. Most of the time when a pastor leaves and a search committee is elected, you know, everyone except maybe one person on the committee has never hired a pastor before. And it's different than in the corporate world. So actually at you guys' invitation, we put together a book to try and help search committees. And it's just sort of a step-by-step guide to things you wouldn't know unless you've done it before.
Very good. Very good. So in looking at what the findings were that really brought about the book Next, I know there was a lot of research and things that went into it. The first question I have for you today is really, how do you build a culture of succession in a church? I mean, we often hear the term, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So when we go back and we think about, okay, there's a strategic way we go about succession, yes, but how do we build a culture of succession within a church, really, you know, from the senior level on down?
Well, I think the easiest place to start, and if people are afraid of a conversation about succession because it assumes that you're going to lose your job or it sounds like you're getting moved out. So the far easier thing to do would be the what happens if the bus hits you approach. You know, what happens if you couldn't get to work tomorrow? If you died or if you were incapacitated or you had a family member get sick and you had to say, I am no longer here and I'm sorry, but I can't be here. Who would take over the duties and responsibilities you have? Who behind you could move up? If people think through that emergency plan, even if you say, what if you're all of a sudden unable to come to work for 3 months or 4 months? People start thinking about, all right, someone is going to come behind me. It's just a mind shift from I'm going to stay here forever because leaving would be unfaithful to, oh, wow, we better have a plan in place in case something happens to me. And people in church get that because we're, you know, unfortunately burying people a lot.
Yeah.
And I mean, I read one study a few years back that said the most overinsured group of people that would be considered a professional job are ministers. They buy more life insurance than they ever need. And it's because they're around death all the time. So, you know, the ability to think that way is there in clergy and in church staff members. It's just they haven't been given permission. So the easiest permission I know is to say, let's talk about short term. Let's talk about you got to go away for 3-4 months or you die tomorrow. What would happen? And that sort of kickstarts a different way of thinking. And it might be that there are 100 different strategies after that, but the culture of thinking about what's next man up, that can start with this sort of emergency plan.
And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, a lot of times when we think of the topic of succession, we're thinking about the senior leader. And I know that, you know, Vander Blumen does search for churches for all different kinds of roles within the church. Is that same thing hold true when we look at a culture of succession and how to build it? Should every staff person, every leader be asking themselves that same question?
Everyone at our office does. So there's a next man up. And that doesn't mean we won't ever have to do a search to replace somebody, but there is an immediate emergency plan for everybody. I mean, you know, we're recording this now in the summer and we do searches for anything that's full-time ministry, right? And I would say the one search that's seasonal is student ministry. I think the average stay for a student pastor now, but what we see, about 18 months, it's really, really short.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. If you get 2 years, then you're better than normal. But what we found is about right after Easter, student pastors start walking into their head pastor's office saying, I'm going to see my kids through graduation because they want to sing whatever the current Friends Are Friends Forever is. and then they're going to be gone and they want to start the new school year with their new youth group. And then the pastor's left flat footed. And so we're like neck deep in student pastor searches right now. And it would be different if the student pastor had some level of emergency plan. Now, that may mean just a plan to get you through whenever I do leave. It may not be that you've got the next student pastor trained up. Churches are not often big enough to have that deep of a bench. But the volunteer base that could take over in the interim while you're looking for somebody would create a much smoother pipeline, if you will.
Yeah.
So I think it goes all the way down to everything. You know, everybody wants to talk to me. They know we do a fair amount of work for Willow Creek. So everybody's like, tell me about Bill Hybels' succession plan. When's he going to retire? That's going to be such a big deal when he retires. I was like, guys, y'all don't understand. Bill is amazing. His place in heaven is going to be way nicer than mine. He's been a mentor to me for years. But Bill's not who you should worry about. It's when Jean Blunt, Bill's assistant, retires. When she retires, then we got a real problem. So, you know, admin assistants, this sounds like the craziest thing in the world. But if you're a pastor out there and you've got somebody that manages your schedule and in most churches literally knows where all the bodies are buried, that's a really key pipeline to keep moving forward. If you can't solve that when they leave, the whole church will grind to a halt. You're only needed one day a week.
Yep. Wow. I think that's very insightful. What are some practical things that somebody can look for as far as in preparation for life stage or in preparation for what are some of the common risks that you might look for vacancy in a role in a church? We all know that things, emergencies can happen. Typically we think of succession as this person gets hit by a bus, but what are some things that you found that might be a more commonplace reason why people have to find a new role?
Well, student pastors, you know, I'm going to offend somebody. Sorry.
Go for it. We do that all the time.
There comes a point where it's a little bit weird if you're still doing student ministry. I mean, how long do you want to be vacuuming up popcorn and playing, you know? So it's natural for a student pastor to graduate, if you will, and that's not to diminish student ministry at all. And Doug Fields is probably hate tweeting me right now because he's been at it a long time. But in general, you know, that's just a starting spot for ministry. And then people become a campus pastor or a senior pastor. So you can almost always count on movement in that spot. In fact, I think it's more volatile than the children's ministry spot. You find a really good children's pastor and pay him well, they usually stick around, stay put. They like putting roots down. One place that I see a real danger or a soft underbelly in the church is when you get the great worship leader. And sounds awful. I'm not committing ageism, equal opportunity employer, but I can't tell you how many, you know, mid 40s worship leaders have called me saying, I got replaced by somebody a lot younger and I don't know what I'm going to do with my life now. And, you know, if you're in a high energy, contemporary modern church and you're trying to, you know, look for your next gig and you are past that mid 40s spot, man, smart worship pastors are thinking beyond being on the stage to what's the long haul look like.
Right.
So that all sounds really crass and not very spiritual, but it's just, you know, after doing 1,000 searches, I've seen it too many times. And, you know, when I was a young guy, I took the senior pastor that I had as my last stop, a fairly large church. I was 31 years old and John Maxwell was mentoring me and it was great. I mean, spent way too much time with me. But I said, John, what should I be doing right now that I don't know I should be doing? And he said, here's the thing, William. Smart young leaders spend their early years creating options for their later years. So just create options. And I think that's sort of didn't sink in until later in ministry, but it might be something for listeners to take away and say, what options am I creating so that if I age out of this ministry or that talent is no longer needed, I've got somewhere else to go, something else to do. So it's almost not just succession of who's going to replace you, but succession of what would I do next if this weren't an option?
Right, right. Well, I'm going to shift to our second question now, and that is, when have you seen succession fail?
Nearly every time.
Okay.
That was easy.
What are some of the key factors? I mean, why does this happen so much?
Yeah. So, okay. I know we're talking about succession at every level. I'm so excited about this conference that's coming up. The ones that I think, oh my gosh, this is really hard, is the guy who follows the legacy pastor, the guy who's been there a long, long time and been really successful. That is really difficult.
Yeah.
And some of the reason I think that those become difficult is if you honestly ask everybody in the church and the pastor and his family, like, is this happening on time or are we a little late? Or are we, most of the time people stay a little too long and they're past their effectiveness. You know, it's not like I'm dating myself as ancient by knowing the TV show Seinfeld. That was actually on this thing called cable TV that they had. So, you know, they chose.
Hey, I had to explain to our interns today what an Ethernet cable was.
Right, right.
So
pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was interviewing an older pastor on our podcast, and one of my set questions is, what app are you really enjoying right now? And he said, you know, the chicken quesadillas at Fridays.
That's amazing.
So anyway,
sorry, I completely derailed.
Seinfeld went out on top. Most TV shows wait till, like, you know, tonight on a very special Blossom. When it's a very special show, the wave is crested, it's over, and they're trying to revive it with some special, you know, conjecture. I think pastors tend to stay a little too long. And it's not a bad thing, and this is not a criticism. It is, here's what it is. For, you know, number one fear people have, public speaking. And that is an old Seinfeld joke. People would rather be the subject of a funeral than the speaker at the funeral. Number one fear. And then on top of that, not just public speaking, but what is it that God puts in a man that allows him to stand up and publicly speak and say, this is what God's word says and what it means for your life. That's big, right?
Right.
If you're a pastor, don't take for granted that you can do that. That's very rare, but there's a shadow side to that. It's the thing that will make you think, I've got one more year. It's an unusual amount of confidence in your ability to do things that allows you to publicly speak. And that unguarded can lead to what we call in the book, Brett Favre syndrome. You know, he just didn't quite know when to hang it up.
Yep.
I think another reason succession happens and goes poorly, and again, this is more about retirement for the outgoing senior pastor, but it would apply for every level. And that is people get addicted to their salary. They can't afford to move on. They can't afford to walk away from whatever job they've got for a season because it's time to make a change. And they get chained to either the salary or the perks or whatever the thing is. I know people don't go into ministry and just get rich, but in ministry, you know, your skill set, what are you going to go do if you suddenly couldn't do ministry? Well, not brain surgery. You know, you're not going to be a pilot. So it's a fairly limited skill set. And I think John Maxwell's words come back to me, you know, create financial options for yourself and create vocational options for yourself. I think if pastors would focus a little bit more on that, we'd see a better success rate at succession.
I've seen a great little chart. I think Marshall Goldsmith wrote a book on succession, and it was all right. But most of the stuff I love. But this book, one big takeaway I had was there was a visual of basically a guy who is, you know, coming up to retirement and how he spends his time, how much time is spent running the organization, how much time is developing a successor, and then how much time is creating a life worth living outside the job. And you look at what the traditional person does, which is they're running the, you know, they're running the company until the bitter end and spending, and at the very end is when they start to, you know, ramp up a person and give some of their responsibility away. And then next to no time, you know, building a life outside, outside their current role. And so, you know, it was a beautiful visual of, hey, how can I effectively, you know, kind of come to an end? But I think one of the biggest findings for me that you guys pulled out of Next was just that pastors aren't putting enough money in retirement, so they can't afford to retire.
Well, and they don't sit still well either. I know I don't. I mean, does it sound fun moving to Palm Desert and playing golf every day?
Not at all.
Not at all. I mean, a lot of people, that's the dream, but we're terrible at that. So it's almost like there needs to be a financial option and a vocational option to go alongside it. And, you know, for me, like, I hate the name of our company. I really don't like it. And, you know, we were going to name our company something like the Pastor Finder, or, you know, We Staff the Church. Or I think I have lifetime platinum status at GoDaddy because we bought all these domain names. And I, you know, we hired a brand consultant to come in and look at them all and look at the search engine optimization and all. And the one rule was you can't name it after me because I don't want to sound like a law firm and I don't need to be the center of this.
Right.
And I've done the wrestling match with pride my whole life. I know it's a soft spot, so it's like, do not name it after me. He came back after doing his study and his, you know, witchcraft on the internet to see what would work best. And he said, you know, here's the thing, William, the 13 letters in your name don't occur in any combination anywhere else in the English language.
I believe it.
And he was not like a church guy. He was an SEO guy. He said, your last name is so screwed up, it works. So name the company after yourself. You will find that people can misspell you 100 different ways in Google and it'll still go back.
Exactly.
So we went with it, right? But I've been hypersensitive to it. And this is not a total rabbit trail. This does get back to succession. Okay. My annual review is one question and it's pass fail. And I think every pastor could probably adopt this and it would change their thinking. My annual review from my board is, did you this year, did you make yourself less essential to the growth and work that we're doing? I mean, what if pastors had part of their annual review? Did you make yourself less essential to the growth and ministry of this church? Every year, a little less essential, kind of a John the Baptist decrease sort of thing. It changed my thinking. I mean, I love doing searches. I love solving puzzles, but I have to not do those. I have to pour into my lead team. I have to back off and do books instead. So it's really changed my thinking for our long-term plans. And I think it translates to ministry as well.
So I'm going to go – actually, that moves us very well into question three, which is, what are some of those key factors that would lead to a successful transition? Like, how? What are some of the things that you've seen that churches have done or people have done that have led to a successful transition?
Well, I think you begin with the end in mind. In the corporate world, publicly traded companies, most of them are bound by their bylaws and some, to some extent, by Sarbanes-Oxley, by law, to have some part of succession planning as what they do. It's the board responsibility. So usually the very first meeting of a CEO with the board will be, all right, let's talk about what happens when I'm not here anymore. So right out of the gate, they're talking about succession. The successions that I'm seeing go well, and ask me again in 20 years, because it's going to be a whole different ballgame after all these baby boomers have, you know, retired. I'll actually know way more then than now. But the guys that I'm seeing that are getting it right are addressing it early. And that could apply to any level of staff person. But like, you know, where we used to say, you know, funny thing, you write a book about something, then people want you to come consult about it. So we do a boatload of succession consulting now, and not just me, but we have a team and they work on. It used to be we'd come in, we'd do a day or two of consulting, we'd write up a report, get back to the board, here are the things you need to think about and do, and they're off their merry way. Last week we signed a 10-year contract with the church for succession consulting. Pastor's 57 and thinks it's 10 years left, and so for the next 10 years, we're going to walk down that road with them. We signed a 7-year contract not long after that. So I'm seeing people start to be okay with the conversation and starting it earlier and earlier so that, you know, financial obstacles can be overcome and avocational obstacles can be overcome, and how the rest of the family is going to deal with things can be overcome. So whether it's the student pastor thinking realistically, how long do I want to be here, or the pastor starting a conversation early, early is better. And I have had to repent of a pretty serious prideful sin I made when I was pastor. I used to think if people worked for me and were thinking about leaving, that that was somehow passing judgment on me or somehow disloyal to me. Or even in the darkest parts, well, that's, he's my guy. And, you know, God's just woken me up to this and said, William, they're my guys. They're my women. They're my men. They're not yours. It's one kingdom. It's many locations. Get healthy and quit thinking about people as your own. That's just unholy possessiveness. And I think if you're a senior pastor out there and you're nervous about succession going through your culture because people might leave and you might lose your people, hey, learn from me. I have stepped on this rake and gotten hit in the face. It doesn't feel good. Start talking succession at every level. You, as the senior leader, are the only person who can really give the permission for this conversation to start.
Excellent, excellent. So, you know, ideally it's good to have succession that happens internally. But when is it best to hire externally?
That is such a good question. I get asked that all the time, and I'm a huge fan of raising people up from within. I mean, culture trumps strategy for breakfast. You mentioned that recently. In fact, I'm doing quite a bit of work on that now and believe it more than ever. And if you bring somebody up from within the house, the culture piece is answered. You know, when should it not, or should you ever go outside? You know, Todd, I'm from deep in the woods of Western North Carolina, right? It's kind of near where they filmed an old movie called Deliverance.
And hey, I'm from a very similar area in Kentucky, okay. So there with you, Ron.
Then you'll understand this, the teachability of this lesson. Constant inbreeding does not end well. You know, like too many toes and fingers. If you just hire from within, you're shortchanging your congregation. You've got to have some measure of voices from the outside. In fact, we have one client that I won't name, very sophisticated church, large, large, large church, and they have a formula. We want this percentage of our people to be from outside. Even if we have a qualified person from the inside, we're not going to be just people from in here. We're going to have outside voices coming in. So that's one thing to ask yourself. Have you gotten too lopsided? Because you bring somebody in from the outside and they might have fresh eyes and they might say, why do we do things this way? Which, by the way, is a great question to let people ask in their first 6 months of employment. Anytime you bring an outsider in, the biggest gift they're going to bring you when they don't know anything is that they really don't know how things are done around here. And they might ask about a sacred cow that makes you go, oh, wow, I didn't realize we've just kind of all gotten used to this and it needs to be done differently. So are you over balanced with just internal people? Next question would be, in the succession, how's it going? You know, are things going well? Or has it been a dip? Has it been a long slide in the worship ministry or the children's ministry? The only thing to break out of a 15-year plateau or decline is a severe change. And so it may be that having someone different that's not from around here is going to be a solution. And then finally, I'd just say a lot of the external hires that we see in churches that love to hire internally are tech-specific jobs. Like, in a smaller church, maybe it's a really good worship leader. Well, we only have one that's really good at training teams and, you know, there's nobody behind them. Or in a larger setting, it's like, man, our internet web design person is awesome and they left and I don't have anybody else. So those specialty positions that require some form of skill that's not just pure leadership, you're going to find that you need external hires there sometimes too.
So, and forgive me, I can't remember if it was Next or if it was Search, but one of the books you talk about finding an external candidate is a lot like an organ transplant. Can you kind of explain how do you find someone that is enough like you that it'll take, but different enough, but different enough to bring, you know, good value to the organization from that external perspective? How do you find that sweet spot?
Man, that if I had a formula, I'd write a book. I really think it's why we exist. It's so funny. Everybody wants to have, like, at the end of the day, hiring is a Holy Spirit-led decision. And if I'm working with a company that's not a, you know, church or whatever, it's a gut thing. And if you think about how the Holy Spirit is talked about in the Old Testament, not just Sophia wisdom, but like, how did the priest figure out what God was saying? It was, you know, through the gut. It's an intuition. It's a discernment would be the spiritual gift that's highest. And at the end of the day, when you hire, it does come down to a gut decision. I have clients who are like, well, if they're not a DI on the profile, or we have this test and it tells us whether they'll work or not, those are all a lie. You know, and a lot of them are illegal to use as a hiring tool. You can use it as an onboarding tool. But at the end of the day, it is a gut decision. So knowing yourself really, really well will help you know whether somebody fits or not. And, you know, this is a shameless plug, but outside eyes really help with this. You would never do a heart transplant on yourself. You know, and so if you're doing an organ transplant, you need to have a surgeon that's not you or somebody related to you. So I don't know if that's helpful or not, but that's, you know, kind of what comes to top of mind.
Good deal. All right. Well, how does a pastor or a key leader live both in the here and now and in the next?
Well, I think there's, you know, the short view and then the long view. And I think you have to spend time on both of those. What's the old line? People always overestimate what they can get done in a year, but they underestimate what they can get done in 10.
Yep.
And I think having one eye on the 1 year and one eye on the 10 year is a huge help. And don't underestimate in the long view what happens as your kids age. You know, it gets hard to move them when they're in high school, but then when they're gone, maybe it's time to move. Or when your parents age and somebody's got to go take care of them. But thinking on down the line and having some dedicated time to drop back and say, what does the 10, 20, 30 year look like? And then making sure you're not always just thinking about that, but you're grinding as hard as you can on the 1 year. And for me, that's just scheduled time. For me, it's a few times a year. And then it's also my long walk with my spiritual advisor, Moses, our poodle. Adrian and I take a long walk with him and do long range thinking and vision when we do probably about a weekly basis. So having some kind of dedicated time to think long term and then never take your eye off the ball on the immediate.
Very good. Well, William, I just want to thank you for our conversation today. It's always fruitful and very much looking forward to having you at the Pipeline Conference this fall. If you would like more information on Vanderblumen, you can Google it because I'm not going to try to spell vanderblumen.com. Just go ahead and Google it, as he said, and he will pop up. the next thing would be take a look at the book Next, take a look at the book Search, or you can find him on Twitter W Vanderblumen would be his handle. So thank you very much for listening and tune in next week. Please leave us a rating and review.
Before you go, we want to remind you about the free e-booklet, Pipeline, Succession at Every Level. If you want to develop leaders at every level of your church, this booklet is for you. To download, go to lifeway.com/leadership. and select the free booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top, and you can download it there.